From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in Fresno, California, where a middle school student named Madison Vidrio was worrying about how to keep up her grades. Madison had struggled with schoolwork for most of her life, and in seventh grade, she learned that she had dyslexia. Now, years later, in an editorial for the Fresno Bee, she wrote about that diagnosis and how it was deflating. She wrote, quote, "When I first learned about it, I didn't want to keep trying. I had an excuse now for why my grades were so low. Why should I try harder?" End quote. But then, her school introduced a new personalized learning program. Madison was encouraged to learn at her own pace and use the resources that worked best for her, whether it was reading a text, watching a video, or taking notes. In the program called Summit Learning, students do not move on to the next topic until they master the material. Madison said at first, the approach was frustrating. She thought that the material was too advanced for her and she wouldn't be able to move on. But she says her teachers gave her the space to learn and challenged her to keep trying. Now, as a freshman in high school, Madison is in the top 12% of her class, and she loves to read. She's one of 40 million Americans, roughly, or more than 40 million Americans, living with dyslexia. Called an invisible disability, dyslexia is a learning disorder that often goes undiagnosed, both in childhood and adulthood. This hour, our guests help us understand what dyslexia is, what it is not, and we address some common misconceptions related to the disorder. And we'll also talk about what families and schools can do to make the educational experience more inclusive for children with dyslexia. We'll tell you about workshops coming up this week, so there's a lot going on. And hello to our guests in studio. Kara Olds is a family education specialist at Starbridge. Kara, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And Courtney Hathaway is a school social worker. And Courtney, welcome to you as well.
Thank you very much.
Kara, just briefly, why don't you tell us what Starbridge is?
Starbridge is a nonprofit that is funded by grants, and we help individuals with disabilities from the age of preschool all the way through adults. I specifically am a family education specialist, and we work with students primarily in the elementary, middle school, and high school who are struggling within school.
Okay. So we're going to focus on dyslexia this hour, and we will invite questions or comments from listeners. If you want to email the program, you can reach me or producer Megan Mack at connections@wxxi.org, connections@wxxi.org. You can call the program, and it's toll-free, 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. I think it'll be valuable right out of the gate to ask our guests, what are the misconceptions they hear most often about dyslexia? Courtney, what do you hear most often?
I would say that the student is unmotivated. They're not trying hard enough. It could be the student themselves may feel, I'm stupid, I'm dumb, why is everybody else getting it and I'm not? And so those are things that they themselves may feel, but equally so might kind of be put on them the way just maybe going through school where you're asked to read, write, and process all day long. And if those things are the things that are challenging, it can be a really long day.
Yeah, in a moment, we'll follow up with Courtney, who's a school social worker, about those conversations. They've got to be really hard to have with kids who are talking about themselves in that way. Kara, what about you? If you ask the average person walking down the street, what is dyslexia? What do you think they're going to say, and what do you think they'll get wrong?
I think the primary answer is going to be, oh, well, it's where you see letters backwards, right?
Yeah.
And that's pretty much all they know.
Or they don't know anything.
Or they don't
know
anything at all. Yeah.
I don't know. What is that?
Right.
Yep. So most commonly, that's what I heard growing up. In fact, unfortunately, when it comes to conditions like schizophrenia, dyslexia, sometimes the comedy scene will grab onto a condition and will caricature it. And that's what we most often are left with. I mean, I can think of book titles that sort of parody dyslexia as something that you just simply spell words backwards. Is that part of it at all?
It can be. Spelling is often a troublesome area and a need for folks, but that's only one component of dyslexia. It's so much more. It's the whole decoding and understanding the sounds go together and work together. And it's also just how folks process information. They process reading and information differently than folks who don't have dyslexia, and that part of the information doesn't have anything at all to do with reading.
Okay, so for students, if I'm a parent and you say, look, you know, your son's got dyslexia. What's the earliest diagnosis we see? How old?
You can be diagnosed at age 5 and a half.
Starting at age five and a half. So what does that mean? Take me through what you're going to tell a parent. I say, I have no idea, Cara, what that means. So you just told me my child has dyslexia. What is it?
So dyslexia is an unexpected learning disability because it feels like the student should be able to do this because the person has a great vocabulary or it can be charismatic or can be good at sports or whatever. It just feels very unexpected. And so that's the first thing is to say it's okay. It also means that they may need to have some different instruction in school. They may need to have tests read to them or books read to them, audiobooks. They may need to have more time on their tests. They may need to learn how to read using different kinds of instruction that non-dyslexics may not need.
Okay. What does it come from?
You're just born with it. What does dyslexia come from? You're just born with it.
And there's no cure, and it's invisible.
Yep.
So I think from my lens, that can be one of the things that can be really hard because we live in a society that we're visual, right? So if you see someone, chances are, who is in a wheelchair and walking, entering the door, you're going to hold the door. But if you see someone, let's give the example, at a fast food restaurant and they go up to the menu and it's taking them a little longer to make their order selection, you might think, hurry up, like what's wrong? Rather than, wow, maybe it's taking them longer to process and to find what they want on the menu and order that. So that piece, that hidden piece of it can be really challenging, as well as the lack of understanding what it is and how does it affect the person, not just academically, but socially and emotionally.
How do we diagnose and how comfortable are we that the diagnosis is going to be correct? Mm-hmm. Cara?
So the diagnosis, that's where it gets to be a little bit tricky. Mm-hmm. So the diagnosis typically comes from a psychologist or a neuropsych. Schools will often say, we can't diagnose dyslexia, but what they can do is evaluate for the components that make up reading. So what is their spelling? What is the fluency? What is their decoding? What is their reading comprehension? So those are all the components that make up dyslexia. But it comes into a struggle because schools can't identify medical diagnoses, but they can identify the components that go along with it. Whether it's accurate or not, typically it's accurate is what we find when it's identified and diagnosed by a psychologist or a neuropsych.
So we're going to talk this hour about what we do with that diagnosis, mm-hmm. what parents can do, what educators can do. Mm-hmm. Also, I think it'll be valuable to discuss what it means if you're an adult who gets a diagnosis of dyslexia and what that might, sort of help reveal for you and help you understand better about things that you may be challenged by, but also, again, what the steps are going forward. Before we do that, we'll talk a little bit more about why we're having this conversation this week. There's a couple events coming up. There's one tomorrow, but let's work backwards because on Thursday, Starbridge's 2018 Education Conference is focused on dyslexia, what it is and how to help. And, Cara, my understanding is you guys try to take the temperature of what educators and mm-hmm. families want to know more about. Dyslexia was coming up a lot?
It is. We're getting a lot of calls from families about dyslexia or struggling readers. I'm not sure what to do about it. The families may call in and say, my student is struggling in school. They're in fourth grade reading at a second grade level. They're not progressing. And that seems to be a common call that we get.
If you get that kind of comment from a family, if a child is, at a second grade level when they're in fourth grade, does your mind go to dyslexia right away? Is it a sort of a slow? You're shaking your head over there, Courtney.
Well, I think you at a school or anyone, nobody's looking to diagnose. The first step is let's assess all of the different things that are going on. And in a school setting, we're going to look at what are the interventions within the classroom. So tier one, tier two, tier three, and really look at, providing those interventions, making sure they're provided with fidelity. And then with those interventions, is progress being made? And if not, then we might say, maybe there's something else going on. But that's not something we're just going to automatically jump to. Really looking at the whole child and what are the different factors that could be impeding it, kind of help t- to formulate the next steps.
Okay, Cara, agree?
I totally agree. I think that's a great thing is that, you know, when I get a phone call, it's because a parent is feeling a little desperate or is wondering what else they can do because they feel lost. A lot of times our conversations first begin with what's been going on in school. What if they are they in reading intervention? How long have they been in reading intervention? Just like Courtney was saying.
All right, so looking at the events, so Thursday, Starbridge's 2018 Education Conference starts at 8 a.m. and it goes to 3:30. It's at the Hilton Garden Inn at College Town in Rochester. And you can jump online at starbridgeinc.org to learn more, starbridgeinc.org, if you want to learn more about the conference, or you can call them. 585-224-7248, because my understanding is space still available for Thursday. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who do you want to see there on Thursday, Cara?
I would love to see all school personnel, reading interventional, reading specialists, CSE chair folks, the school psychologists, teachers, everybody, because anybody that a student is going to interact with can benefit from learning more about dyslexia.
All right. So that's Thursday. But tomorrow, there is a free workshop at the main campus of the Al Siegel Community Center that's Understanding Dyslexia, an Overview for Families. Again, that's a free workshop, and it is tomorrow, and you've got presenters who are going to be helping lead that. So if you want to get involved with that, you can still do that tomorrow, yes?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So that's a great opportunity tomorrow and Thursday. If you have a diagnosis of dyslexia, if it comes up in your children's lives or someone in your sphere, this is a great opportunity to learn a lot more this week. How much better do you think we are, I'll ask both of you, now than we were 10 years ago, a generation ago, at understanding dyslexia and how it's impacting, starting with kids? Are we getting better, Cara?
I think there's a lot of information that's out there. I think that it has been slow to penetrate within the school walls.
Okay. Courtney, fair?
Yeah, and I think part of that is in New York State, there's 13 classifications when diagnosing a student and or access to services. One of those, it's dyslexia falls under the umbrella of a learning disability. So typically on an IEP, an individual educational plan, which if the student does have that diagnosis, they would receive that IEP or a 504 plan. It doesn't say they have dyslexia as a classification. It's going to be a learning disability, and then it could be documented further down. So I think it's there, but more or less in the school system, it's called a learning disability, and that individual learns differently.
So let's talk about what it looks like in schools when that conversation's happening. And Courtney, you said earlier this hour that there will be moments where students will say some pretty heartbreaking things to you. What are the kinds of things they start to beat themselves up over this, yeah?
Absolutely. And I have an interesting, I wear two hats today to say is I wear the hat of working in a school as a school social worker, but I also wear the hat of living it and breathing it every day as an individual with dyslexia. And I was diagnosed in third grade. So part of what I see students, but also I see myself going through, you have to imagine that if you're sitting in a class and the teacher then says, okay, everybody, you know, I want you to read this short paragraph. You should be able to get right through it. And you have dyslexia where you might be seeing the letters backwards or forwards. You might be seeing you're struggling to decode the word. You're struggling to read it. That time, that short amount of time that should take you to read that paragraph isn't going to be long enough because it's going to take you longer. So your anxiety may start to rise. You might feel like, I can't do this. I'm not good enough. And then you might have, you know, Johnny or Lucy, somebody over there raising their hand ready to contribute, and you haven't even gotten through half the paragraph. So that's where you will really see sometimes behaviors come out. And behind every behavior, there's a reason behind that. So it may be, I can't do this. It's not at my level. And I'm going to appear as the class clown or I got to go to the bathroom right now because I don't want to be put on the spot because it's too challenging.
Okay. And you said your diagnosis came in third grade.
Correct. Yeah.
What were the symptoms for you or how was it manifesting for you?
Yeah. So really it was in reading and spelling as well as processing speed. So like Kara had said, those five components of reading were affected. My decoding, I had good comprehension, so I could look at pictures and really get a good idea of what it was. But then if you ask me, Courtney, what's that word, that individual word, sounding it out, breaking it up, was very challenging for me.
And did you feel like you were falling behind classmates at various subjects?
Absolutely. I mean, it's hard to... You're watching, you're in a classroom where students are progressing, and granted, there are lots of different levels within that class.
Absolutely, yeah.
But, you know, somebody's already finished that paragraph, or they've finished that small writing assignment, which isn't so small to you. And I think over time, that's where not only is it a hidden disability, but it can affect you, your level of confidence and your self-worth, because you feel beaten down. You feel like you can't succeed with potentially some of those, you know, what's being put in front of you. But that's why with accommodations and your support system, people are very, very successful who have dyslexia.
Sure. And I would think the at those younger ages, 5.5, 6, 7, 8, but especially the earlier, mm-hmm. it's tough because kids progress at different levels. And, you know, everybody sort of knows a child who was reading at 3, but maybe they're reading at 3, but sort of with their motor skills isn't really, mm-hmm. you know, and maybe by the time they're 6, they're an amazing reader and they're great at math, but, you know, physically they're kind of clumsy. They couldn't catch sand if they fell off a beach chair, but they can do all these amazing things. They can read all the Harry Potter books, and then all of a sudden the motor skills catch up. And so there's a lot of catching up that kind of happens at different speeds. And as a parent, I would think it's a challenge to say, okay, something is atypically off, or mm-hmm. or something that I need to pursue. Mm-hmm. Can you walk me through the kind of conversations that parents ought to think about there, knowing those things, Kara?
Yeah, you know, earlier we had talked about that students can be diagnosed as young as 5.5. A lot of times it's more identified when they're like 9 and around 3rd or 4th grade, because that's when you stop learning to read, but instead you're reading to learn. And so that's when you really start realizing, like, wow, I thought this was really, as a parent, you'll be saying, wow, I thought that there was something wrong, and now I know that there's something wrong. Because a lot of times, a lot of the conversations will happen in September, October, November of 3rd or 4th grade, because now they're required to read vocabulary words and read definitions and copy notes and make flashcards. And sometimes the transition from copying those notes and being able to spell and hold that information in your mind and be able to write that down, that can sometimes be very problematic for kids with dyslexia.
Okay. And then I'm kind of wondering for parents, and I've got an email I'll read in just a second that kind of shows you how difficult this can be mm-hmm. emotionally mm-hmm. for students and for parents. What kind of progress should we expect once we get that diagnosis, as we talk about, mm-hmm. you know, different ways to help deal with it? What has worked for you? And take me through your story a little bit more, Courtney.
I would say I was diagnosed in 3rd grade, and at that time, reading supports were put into place, and I was in a supported classroom where there was a special education, but I was with my typical developing peers, and work was, I received accommodations, so I went take my tests in a separate location. I had access to class notes or extended time. So those are things to help were put in place to help equal the level of playing field. And then as I progress, I would say for me, I wore a really good mask at school. And what I mean by that, I was the happy, cheer, great friend to many people. But little did most people know how school was so struggling. And so when I would go home at night, that's where I lost it. I would cry. It would spend hours and hours and hours at the kitchen table with my mom, knowing that I wanted to get the work done, knowing that I wanted to do the best I could, but maybe that work in front of me was very challenging. So school is a very difficult place for me. You would never know that Monday through Friday, you know, in school. But the amount of time and energy and that effect on the family as well. But through that, those ups and downs, I also learned some really important things that are those tools and strategies in my toolbox. And that's what I really empower and teach kids about. So for example, helping students understand what are their strengths and what are their challenges. So I can tell you that I am really organized and I am, you know, hardworking, and I will make sure that I could get in front of a group of people and be a leader. But a challenge of mine is to take those notes. If you say in a meeting or, you know, Courtney, why don't you copy that off the board? That's going to be really challenging for me. So what are my strategies that I have used throughout my life? May it be assisted technology. Thank goodness for technology, as there's more and more programs out there that are really helpful in that aspect. And then when I think of going, you know, as a higher, as I continued in my education, when going to college, a lot of times people ask, I want to go to this college because they have great extracurricular activities, or there's a really great major there. For me, knowing that I struggled academically and I needed additional support, I went and found the Students with Disability Services or the Learning Center at that college. And my question was to that center, what makes your learning disability or your Students with Disability Center different than any other college? Because I really needed to find somewhere that was really going to be able to connect and provide that level of support, because I know I needed that to be successful. So I think that is an important component, along with those day-to-day tools and strategies. May it be previewing something ahead of time. May it be listening to audio books. Knowing who your support people are in every place. I mean, I'm thankful every day for my coworkers that I say, hey, how do you spell this? Or does this look okay? And they're constantly asking me questions about various things. So working together as a team and knowing your strengths and challenges is essential.
Yeah, it sounds like a lifelong process, because if parents get this diagnosis, they might be thinking, okay, you got the diagnosis. So is it a pill every morning and does it go away? I mean, and that's tough. But there's not a medication that makes this go away, right?
There is no medication. There is nothing that you can do. It's just learning what, like what Courtney said, is your strengths and your weaknesses. I mean, we all struggle with something, and we all figure out strategies on how to cope with that. And dyslexia is one of those that, unfortunately, it affects reading, which is a fundamental thing that in our world today. And so that feels really big when you're in school. Because you look around at the students, you know, this third or fourth or fifth or sometimes seventh, eighth, ninth graders look around at their peers and are saying, gosh, wow, they're doing something that looks to be so easy. What's wrong with me that I can't read? Why is it so hard for me? So it's really important that we also help our students and our kiddos find things that can build their confidence, because they're in that school setting for 7 or 8 hours a day, and they're struggling all day long. So what we want to do also is find what makes them feel good about themselves, and really make time and carve out time maybe outside of school so that they can feel good about themselves.
Courtney, are you on a day-to-day basis, are there challenges for you, or are you pretty good now at mitigating and knowing how to navigate with dyslexia?
It's something that I face every single day, hour by hour, minute by minute, depending on what it is. Sometimes I'll be like, oh, my dyslexia is really bad today, or my LD brain, my learning disability.
So it does kind of fluctuate a little bit how it hits you?
How it hits me, also to the task at hand that I'm asked to do. I am really great. I'll pick up the phone and I'll be able to say, ask a question. But to sit there and to compose a lengthy email, I am so much better verbally than it is composing that email.
Are you a voice-to-texter?
I do use that. Absolutely. I'm a voice-to-texter, and I'm so glad that, you know, our cell phones have that. I also find it very helpful if I'm typing an email, then to have it text-to-speech, so it will read it back to me, so that it will make, really, it's helpful that what I wrote is what I really meant to write. Because a lot of times the little red ziggly line comes there, and I might click on a word that I think it is, but it's really not. So that's why having it be able to speak it back is really helpful. But it's something that, I mean, as an adult, I'll give this as an example. I am a very social person. I might be going out to dinner. I want to know most of the time where I'm going out to dinner ahead of time. not because, of course, because I want to look at the menu and know what's there, but also so that I can look at the menu ahead of time and really think about what do I want. Because at a restaurant, typically it's louder. You also have, you know, there's different people that are maybe coming at different times, and you want to be able to say hello and get to see them. But in a quick amount of time, your server is going to come over and say, what would you like to eat? So for me, being asked that question, that's a lot of processing, that's reading, it's a lot of different things going on. So helping myself to be proactive to identify that mm-hmm. can be helpful. And that's just part of something I'll do the rest of my life to help me.
Is there physical exhaustion that comes with the learning process for kids with dyslexia, especially when they don't know why something is causing them such struggle, whether it's reading or other things? Do you get sort of physically worn out?
Yeah, absolutely. Depending on the day and how much of something, if it's more hands-on, okay, great, I can do that. But if I'm sitting in front of a computer, or I'm sitting in front of, as a student, where I was going class to class to class, or sitting in a 3-hour-plus college lecture, and being inundated with that information, yeah, it's exhausting. And like I said, it also pulls on you emotionally, because you want to do that. Kids do well if they can, and people want to be successful. Nobody wakes up and say, I want to have a terrible, rotten, no good day. Mm-hmm. And I think when these challenges, you know, are right in front of you day in and day out, it's really important that we work with students and adults with what are your coping strategies, what's in your toolbox. And there are lots of different tools out there. So I think that's a hopeful piece, part of having dyslexia.
As a school social worker, I imagine you might have moments where you talk to a student who gets this diagnosis, and you know, maybe they're feeling frustrated or what would you understand? And you get to tell them, oh, well, it turns out I have dyslexia. Have you had that conversation?
I have. You know, I'm always there for the students, but sometimes that personal connection is really helpful. And I think with that, that's why I'm in the field that I'm in, is because I don't ever say to a student, try harder, or you're not good enough, or don't give up. Mm-hmm. It's how can we work on this together? You're not alone. And that's really powerful, to letting somebody know that they're not alone, and that there are other people, and there are very successful people out there that have dyslexia, and you can be too.
I'm going to ask both of our guests in a moment to respond to this email from a listener named Karen. You're hearing Courtney Hathaway, a school social worker, and Cara Olds is a family education specialist at Starbridge. And Starbridge has some events this week that you ought to know about. You can jump online at their website, Starbridge Inc. That's INC, starbridgeinc.org/events. If you want to find out about their Thursday conference, their 2018 education conference is focused on dyslexia, what it is and how to help. That's at the Hilton Garden Inn at College Town, and they'd love to see you there if you've got questions or needs or a chance to kind of learn a lot more about this, whether you're a parent, an educator, or otherwise. And then tomorrow, so that's Thursday, but tomorrow there's Understanding Dyslexia, an Overview for Families. That's a free workshop at the main campus of Al Siegel. So jump online, learn more about what they've got coming up tomorrow and Thursday. And when we come back from our break, we'll start working through some of your feedback. Connections@WXXI.org if you want to email. Connections@WXXI.org. You can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255. A mother's email next. Coming up in our second hour, the former U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan joins us in studio. Ronald Newman is in Rochester as a guest of the local chapter of the World Affairs Council. He's talking to them tonight about affairs in the Persian Gulf, Afghanistan, and more. And he will talk to us next hour about a wide range of issues. We'll take your questions as well for Ambassador Ronald Newman next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. I'm going to work through some of your feedback as we talk about dyslexia, remembering that dyslexia is not just the stereotypes that we sort of grow up hearing. If you hear anything at all about it, usually what you hear is that, oh, well, that's where people read words backwards. And no, I mean, that is way oversimplifying a complex challenge in learning. And it can be a confusion or a stumbling on certain letters or reversing certain things, but that's just a small component. And that's why our guests are here, helping us understand. So let me read this email from Karen. She says, my son was diagnosed with dyslexia in fifth grade. He has struggled with school since the beginning, reading, spelling, organization, and the diagnosis made sense. When he transitioned from elementary to middle school, somehow the information about his diagnosis did not follow him, and there was less support at the new grade level. While he had a successful year in sixth grade, he is now in seventh grade and struggling. He is very embarrassed about his diagnosis, and I struggle as a mom to comfort him and let him know that he is not stupid. Also, he is reluctant to advocate for himself, and I now find myself letting his current teachers know about his dyslexia because, once again, they seem to be unaware of his diagnosis. He has no current interventions besides paying for a tutor outside of school. What advice would you have for myself and my son moving forward? That's from Karen. There's a lot there. Kara, I'll start with you.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, so... My first question is, does the child have an IEP, an individual education program? Because it's sounding like that may not be the case if the only supports that are available is an outside tutor. And that's often paid for by the family. So my first question would be, has he been evaluated and to find out where to have those struggles documented? In the short, that's a process, and we at Starbridge can always help and guide families through that if he doesn't have one. The other thing that could happen most immediately is to have a team meeting as well. Even though he's in middle school, is to find out, have the team meeting and have him be there as well. And he can talk about, what is hard for him and what does he think would be helpful to be more successful in the school. That can be a little problematic if he's feeling self-conscious about that. But the mom can also be asking him ahead of time. And so if he's not comfortable talking or being at that meeting at that particular time, she can be his voice for him and say, I talked to him and these are some struggles that he's having and here's some solutions that he thinks might be easier. Or if he's not even sure, could pose it to the team. Hey, what else could we do? Because there are a lot of accommodations for a seventh grader, like we were talking about with technology. You know, you can have speech to text, you can have text to speech, you can have books on tape. We call it books on tape. You know, they're now audiobooks.
Sure. Yeah.
But there's a lot, you know, maybe does he need some extra time? Does he need to have tests read? There's a lot of options that are available for him today. It is tough because he's a seventh grader. And there's two components to dyslexia when you get to be in these older grades. One is the actual component of reading. Do I know what those words are? But then he's also in, and it sounds like he's probably reading at a lower grade level. But yet he's in seventh grade, has the ability to comprehend seventh grade work, but has a hard time reading that work. So that's where you need the accommodations piece to come in as well. So there's a lot of things going on, but there's opportunities for him as well to rectify those.
And it sounds to me, before we turn to Courtney for her thoughts on this, that the big red flag for me reading Karen's email is the lack of information traveling from classroom to classroom, mm-hmm. teacher to teacher, grade level to grade level. There has to be a consistency of understanding within the school ecosystem that once there's a diagnosis of dyslexia, everyone should know about it. I would be very concerned about that. I'd be rattling some serious cages if I were a parent about that.
And part of that is that's why I'm not sure that there is an IEP in place, because that mm-hmm. document, that individualized education program, that would be the tool that is being used to communicate all of that throughout the teachers. And sometimes when kids get older, when they're in middle school and high school, that communication does tend to lag a little bit. But it's not like you're in elementary school and you have one teacher or two teachers. So sometimes it's the role of the student to say, hey, I need this, or I have this accommodation because of my dyslexia. Parents can send out emails ahead of time to the teachers and say, hey, Johnny has dyslexia. This is what it looks like. These are some things that mm-hmm. can help him in the classroom.
Get an IEP. Start there at least. Okay. Then there's mm-hmm. the question, though, of, so Kara is saying, have this meeting, make sure there's an IEP, make sure there's a broad understanding of it. And if you can, have your son be there. But in the email, she's saying he's embarrassed about this diagnosis. And Courtney, what I really admired about your own story is, you know, you go to wherever you're going, college, et cetera, and you're asking, what's the quality level of your support for students with disabilities, et cetera? Some students don't like to sort of grab onto the fact that they have been diagnosed with a disability. And, you know, I'm really feeling, you know, the hurt in this parent who's saying he's embarrassed about it. He feels stupid at times. I don't know if he wants to be at a meeting like that, let alone be sort of grappling every day with what that means. What would you say?
Yeah, and that's really common. And I think one of the most important things from my experience, my professional lens, is helping that child to understand what it is that they're struggling with. I use sometimes kind of the idea of a pie or a pizza, if you're dividing it up, as you can see that each section can represent something different. So if I were to tell you about myself, I would say, you know, I'm a sister and I'm a wife and I love to go to the beach and I love summertime. These are all different pieces of me. One piece is that I'm dyslexic and it's a learning disability. That's one piece, but that doesn't define who I am. But that's an important piece to understand. So what that might look like is helping that child to understand and to be exposed to, and this happens in small steps. It might be reading a story about it. It might be maybe their favorite athlete or singer or artist that they really are connecting with. Looking in that field if anybody has dyslexia, because there's many people out there that do. So finding that common ground and then helping to kind of peel back the different layers of what does it mean? It's not, you didn't do anything wrong. There's nothing wrong with you. Your brain thinks differently. And now that we know that, that's why we're going to put these things, accommodations or supports into place. A lot of times I see students not wanting, openly accepting the accommodations or wanting the help because they don't understand why you're giving it to them. So it's important, you know, there's a series of different steps that are taken, and IEP isn't just, you know, given just because you have that diagnosis. But what's important is if you have that diagnosis, what are the different things that can be helpful in your toolbox? And when you know what those are, you know what they are and why you're using them, you're that much more to accept them. So I think that's a really important piece. And then equally so, I kind of touched on this, that social emotional piece of his self-confidence and his self-worth. He all day long is asked to do things that are really hard for him. So making sure that, you know, there's a positive outlet, may it be an extracurricular activity or something when he comes home that he gets to do. Or another thing is may it be volunteering or giving back. And the reason I say that one is because all day long, you're feeling like you need help from others. So if you have the opportunity to give back to someone more in that leadership role, that can really help to build a person up.
Karen, good luck to you and your son, and thanks for sending that email. Let me grab a phone call. This is Dan in Webster. Go ahead, Dan.
Hey, everybody. I have a person, an adult with dyslexia in my family, so there's a couple of books that I'll admit I haven't read yet, but they're on my radar, and I was just wondering if the panel had heard of them and if they could speak about them at all. One of them's called The Dyslexic Advantage, and the other is called The Gift of Dyslexia. And from what I gather, they're basically about modes of thinking and how dyslexic people tend to think more visually than verbally. And I think part of those books, at least, is about the advantages of visual thinking and where verbal thinking can come up short or be disadvantageous in certain ways. So I was just wondering if you've heard of these books and if you think they're worth checking out.
Dan, thank you. Great question. Kara, you want to start?
Sure, yeah. Yes, I've heard of both of them. I have read The Dyslexic Advantage, but have heard of The Gift of Dyslexia. I love information, and I think that dyslexia is something that is often misunderstood. So anytime anybody is interested in reading about dyslexia, I think those are great books. Because there are things that go along. Dyslexia has some challenges, but there's also strengths that go along with it. And so much time and effort is focused on the challenges that understanding what the strengths or the gifts of dyslexia, whether it be, and not everyone, it's individual,
sure.
But, you know, the gift of communication, the gift of being charismatic, or the gift of visual thinking, seeing things 3D-wise, being able to... being super innovative sometimes. So those are gifts that are not recognized when you're in the school setting, because you're in the school setting and you need to be able to read or get that information in your head somehow. But there's a lot of these other things out there, and that can actually, if families read those or if adults read those when they get their diagnosis or if they get diagnosed later in life, to help understand how their mind works and realizing that, hey, I'm not alone, that it's not just me, that there's other people, that there's even books written about it. You know, that can be very empowering and uplifting to know that, hey, I'm not stupid, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Courtney?
Absolutely. I've read The Gift of Dyslexia, and it's a great book. I think it, once again, it focuses on what are those positive characteristics. And I can say personally, a lot of times I say my greatest strength is also my greatest challenge. Mm-hmm. And growing up, would I ever say to you that dyslexia or having a learning disability was a gift or a strength? Absolutely not. It's been very, very challenging. However, as I've gone, I'm resilient and I am able to think and empathize, and my level of compassion is unbelievable because of what I've gone through. So I think that with every challenge, there's great opportunity that can come of it. And I think it's a great book to read. And I appreciate, you know, you looking out there for other resources. That's wonderful.
Well, here's an email from a listener named David, which I think will point out that the sky is the limit here. And that dyslexia is a challenge. But just listen to this email. He says, I'm very much enjoying your discussion. I'd like to mention my uncle, Ray Heinrich, who was the head of hematology at Park Davis in Ann Arbor for many years, retiring in 1977. Among other things, he worked out the molecular basis of a debilitating blood disease, cryofibrinogenemia. As we all know, in the early 60s. He also inspired me to become the successful scientist that I am, albeit a retired scientist myself, and he was dyslexic, a very successful scientist, again, who worked out the molecular basis of that thing with the many syllables. David, thank you for that. It's a great, another great email. And so Dan, David, thanks for reminding us that challenge can also bring us great opportunity. Mm-hmm. Whether it's empathy, whether it's sort of different modes of learning, whether it's different strengths or advantages. So we're talking about dyslexia, and one of the things that we hear occasionally is that a diagnosis of dyslexia tends to, obviously not always, but be tied to other diagnoses, things like ADHD. I don't know if that is true or if that is a myth. Cara?
It can be. I wouldn't say that it's always the case.
Okay.
Because, you know, when you've met one person with dyslexia, you've met one person.
Yeah.
So it can be, you know, if you think of the caller or the email earlier on where they said there were some organizational challenges, that made me think, well, maybe there might be something else going on. But, you know, you want to be looking at what the needs are and in the school setting, whether you get a 504 plan or an IEP, because like Courtney said, dyslexia doesn't always mean just because you have dyslexia, you don't automatically get an IEP. But you want to really be looking at what those needs are and then having the school system adjust accordingly.
I am a little surprised that if there is a diagnosis of dyslexia, there's not an automatic IEP in the schools. And IEP is a term I've only encountered in just the last year because I've got a child in school. And, you know, my son, like a lot of kids, is struggling at certain things and is ahead at certain things. IEPs are crafted in his school district for kids who are struggling in certain ways, for kids who are far ahead in other ways. And they're really thoughtful about it. Mm-hmm. I would think dyslexia is automatic. And should it be, Cara?
So I would love to say yes.
I mean, that presumes that every school has all the resources and all the time in
right.
the world, and I know that's tough.
Right. You know, I think that dyslexia is something that the school districts are also, and people within the school are also still learning about. Although dyslexia, and there is a lot of research out there, it's just not something that has really been prominent, even in when teachers go through their training, it's not something that's been prominent. So having the conference this week is, I'm so excited for our educators in the community to be learning more about dyslexia. So would I love every student who has dyslexia to get an IEP? That would be awesome. But sometimes the school personnel and the family are learning together about what that really means.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
And I think also, too, it's a continuum like anything. Just because you have a diagnosis, there are many people that have ADHD that are not on medication because they're finding other ways that are working for them. So I think part of in the school system, a least restrictive, we're always looking to what are the supports and services that can be included in that student's day. We're looking, we talk a lot about tier RTI, response to intervention. So if a student is responding to tier one and tier two, which level of supports, and they're doing well, we're not going to look to add an IEP or additional accommodations if they are doing well in responding to that intervention. So not every child, although they might have a diagnosis, doesn't mean that they're going to need an IEP or a 504. It really is individualized based off of that child, their skill set, their level of needs. So I think it's important to be also be cautious to that because we don't want to go to the extreme of then everybody that has dyslexia now has an IEP because we really want to look at the whole person.
Okay. Cheyenne writes to us on Twitter and says, thanks for the show on dyslexia. Special education teachers and reading specialists are not always trained in college about the reading programs that work for people who are dyslexic. Parents, educate yourself. Key words are Orton-Gillingham method. Read the book Overcoming Dyslexia by Sally Shaywitz. That is from Cheyenne. So some thoughts there. And she's concerned that special ed teachers and reading specialists are not always trained in college about the reading programs that work for people who are dyslexic. Fair criticism?
I think that's fair. That has been my understanding as well. I think it's changing, to be fair, that some universities are changing their programs. But I think historically, true.
Okay. Yeah. Courtney?
Yeah. I mean, I think every college is different. Mm-hmm. Every student that goes, what they specialize in and look into per se, you know, is that, you know, college student really, if they're looking at a learning disability, are they doing research on specific what is dyslexia? They might be more focusing on the five components of reading. So I think, yes, In colleges, from my broad spectrum, yes, they are learning about learning disabilities. Are they learning the specifics about dyslexia? You know, maybe there's still some work to do. But I think majority of the educators that I've worked with, they're open to learning. Mm-hmm. And they want that information. And it really looking at that team approach. Equally so, we've talked, you know, a lot about at the elementary and high school level, but beyond, you know, even as an adult, how does that affect you in the workplace and workplace accommodations and working together as a team? So I think those are important aspects as well.
Squeezing in a couple more quick questions from listeners. One wanting to know about the events the next couple of days, free or not. The event tomorrow, I know, is free. The event Thursday is not free. So the event tomorrow, Understanding Dyslexia, an Overview for Families, and that's going to be held at the main campus of Al Siegel. You can register through Starbridge Inc. if you want to do that. The number to call is 585-224-7399. It's the education conference on Thursday that Starbridge is hosting called Dyslexia, What It Is and How to Help from 8 to 3:30 at the Hilton Garden Inn at College Town. You can learn more about that event as well online, starbridgeinc.org/events, starbridgeinc.org/events. 90 seconds, Mark emails, just wants to know, is there a single common symptom that shows up in kids first with children with dyslexia?
I would say that there are some common symptoms, not a single one, but things like pronunciation issues when they're in kids. Sometimes we think it's super cute, but that may be a sign. The inability to rhyme or hear rhymes is also, so you know, sat and hat and cat and mat. Sometimes kids will be like, truck, they fit right that in, thinking that it rhymes. Inability to sound out simple words. like Matt or Hat, that's difficult. And slow, laborious reading. Sometimes it'll be described as robotic reading. The person sounds like a robot when they're reading. And difficulty remembering sight words. Those are kind of the key things that pop.
Which doesn't mean every one of those individualized issues means dyslexia.
Not at all.
But it means more common to show up in children eventually with a diagnosis.
Right.
Anything you want to add there, Courtney?
No, I think that's spot on. And I think just knowing that if you have a diagnosis or not have a diagnosis, there are lots of supports and services mm-hmm. in our communities, in schools, and that we're more alike than different.
You look like a person who is ready to spread this message over the next couple of days. Courtney's got, they're so eager to tell the community about this. And I know it's been an educational hour, a lot of feedback from our listeners on all different platforms. I want to thank both of you for taking the time to be here. I wish you well over the next couple of days. And thank you. Thank you for sharing your stories, your professional stories, your personal story, Courtney. It's really moving. Thank you very much for
being
here.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Courtney Hathaway is a school social worker, and Cara Olds is a family education specialist at Starbridge. All right, let's get a short break and much more connections straight ahead.